Was Thomas Jefferson a closet atheist for all practical purposes? Thomas Jefferson is certainly one of our most important founding fathers. He wrote the first draft of the Declaration of Independence, which says that our rights come from the Creator. When it comes to Jefferson and his faith, it is certainly a very nuanced picture. In fact, I once co-wrote a book on this called Doubting Thomas. The co-author was Dr. Mark Belisles of Charlottesville, Jefferson's hometown. And in fact, Mark Belisles joins us now to discuss Jefferson and his faith and this idea, well, was he really kind of a closet atheist? I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Focal Point. And Mark, we welcome you back to the program. Thanks for joining us.
Glad to be with you, Jerry. God bless.
Sure. Okay. Was Jefferson a practical atheist for all practical purposes?
Far from it. In fact, he very directly in some of his letters said, I can never be an atheist. And he also never claimed and ever identified himself as a deist ever in his life. The only thing he self-identified as was two separate times he made it very clear, I am a Christian, is how he identified. He might have had a variety of ways of thinking that may not fit all our typical ways of identifying Christians today, but that's how he self-identified. I am a Christian.
Well, okay, now we certainly know that some of his views on parts of the Bible and so forth seem to kind of be unorthodox. I mean, for example, he said the book of Revelation was, you know, he didn't like it at all and didn't think it was inspired. He even said as far as the Gospels, the finding the true statements of Jesus in the Gospels is like trying to find diamonds in a dunghill. They're very easy, which sort of makes me feel like, okay, so he decides, okay, this statement from Jesus is authentic and this other one isn't. And that's not based on some sort of textual criticism or something within the text itself, but rather maybe his own bias, I guess. And by the way, those are later views of his life, right?
True. Much later. I think he didn't start saying that type of thing until he was in his 60s, 70s, early 80s. So it was a later expression. And he always said that privately. He was never publicly. The public affirmations of all of the scripture would be more of how he was known to the public. Like at the same time that he was saying about, you know, diamonds in a dunghill, he was also pledging money to be a member of the Virginia Bible Society to distribute whole Bibles to people throughout the Commonwealth. So, I mean, there's definitely a lot of complexity in his life and when he's trying to kind of say some of his views on things. And mostly he was influenced in that regard on scripture about a lot of times things people wrote, like Priestley and others, about the corruptions that they believed that the priest in the Middle Ages did to the scriptures. So, and Jefferson kind of bought into some of those intellectual kinds of views, even though he's not really trained as a theologian himself, really. So he was really kind of misinformed.
What was the whole deal with the so-called Jefferson Bible? And the way it's often presented these days, it's as if he set out to essentially take the miracles out of the Holy Bible.
Yeah, that's also very common misrepresentation. Jefferson himself put together this digest of what Jefferson called the philosophy of Jesus of Nazareth, reduced from Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. This is in his own writings for the as an abridgment of the Gospels for the use of the Indians at their level of comprehension. That was his main reason. That was his own title he gave to it for this digest. It was not trying to necessarily to be against something, but it was just to prioritize something. It was not against miracles or against the rest of Scripture. In fact, if you look through all of his writings, he quoted to the end of his life over and over again almost every book of the Bible, maybe not book Revelation, but almost from the writings of Paul, from the writings of the Old Testament, from Moses, from many scriptures. He quoted all of the scripture. He read all of the Bible clearly throughout his life. But this digest was misrepresented as to that he was against everything other than the words of Jesus.
Well, when you say he quoted all these different books of the Bible, well, so does Richard Dawkins, you know, leading atheist of today. You're not saying he quoted it to say, oh, this is wrong and that is wrong. You're saying he quoted it like scripture, essentially.
affirming it as for principles that he identified with. Yes, he would in letters to, whether it was private letters to some of his family members or to some other friends, he would quote almost every book of the Bible, something about, you know, that would be an affirming principle that he got from reading the Bible, every part of the Bible.
Okay, was Jefferson influenced by the atheists in France who were involved in the French Revolution, or Voltaire, or the French philosophers, that kind of thing, in an anti-Christian way? Was he influenced?
No, I don't believe so. That's a common view of some modern biographers. Jefferson clearly met some of those people and would be in intellectual discussions with them, of course. And so in some sense, maybe you could say he was influenced, but he himself was very close to many what he would consider very respectable clergymen in the Roman Catholic Church in France as well. In fact, he one time, a person later in life wrote that Jefferson was associated with, you know, priests and Catholic priests who were atheists. And he rebuked that. He responded in a letter, says, "I would never say such a thing." He says, "All of those that I knew were very fine, respectable clergymen and represented their faith." And it was, so Jefferson, yes, had some exposure to things like that, but yet there's no evidence that somehow it made him less of a believer in a sense than before. He did start having what I would call questions about some things. He said in one letter in 1788 that he didn't comprehend certain aspects of the Trinity, but he didn't actually come out and reject the scriptures completely at that point.
Okay. Oh, did he come out and reject the scriptures at some later point?
Well, no, not really in the sense of what in practice, but I mean what people perceive when he would speak about the corruptions and how you have to kind of separate, you know, diamonds from the dunghill or that kind of thing. That comments, even though he made that, he read the whole Bible and paid for Bibles to be distributed. So it wasn't something he ever completely rejected, by no means.
Huh. Okay. As far as Jefferson and church and state issues, Jefferson is the source of the phrase that's been brought into the American jurisprudence as the interpretation, supposedly, of the First Amendment. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Thomas Jefferson wrote about a wall of separation of church and state, and that was applied by the U.S. Supreme Court in 1947 as being, oh, this is what the Founding Fathers meant when they talked about there'll be no establishment of religion, a strict separation of church and state. Go ahead and take time and just wax eloquent on what did Jefferson intend by this. And does this mean, you know, that little Johnny at 5 years old can't say a little grace at school because Jefferson wouldn't want him to? Jefferson would say that's illegal.
Yeah, I think there's a great misunderstanding what Jefferson was trying to do when he, first off, when he wrote for Virginia the Statute for Religious Freedom, and then later helped to contribute toward this idea of separation of church and state. He didn't actually draft the First Amendment, but he was speaking about it. And by the way, when he wrote about the wall of separation between church and state, he was affirming the views of his evangelical Baptist friends who wrote to him, and he was responding back to them saying, "I agree with you that there should be a wall." But the thing is, the wall that he was talking about was not so much a wall between just God or religion in general and public life. The wall was the wall between the authority of the state governments and the authority of the national government. Very strongly, as a state leader, even himself, while he was governor of Virginia, he proclaimed a public day of Thanksgiving and prayer, citing, you know, God and Jesus Christ. He proposed all kinds of laws right with these same things to empower the governor to proclaim days of prayer on the state level. But when it came to be president, this is where he started clarifying that he believed he should not do it if it basically interferes on the state's responsibility for that. But he had no problems with, say, in the federal territories, which did not have control over their state of government. They were federal territories. He would promote religion very frequently, helping the government pay money for clergymen salaries in the federal territories that are reaching out to Indians or the Catholic nuns in Louisiana territory, these places. So it was not against religion in public life. It was against the usurpation of the state's rights to determine such.
Okay. Can you drill in down further? Let's just take my example. Today, modern America, 5-year-old kid prays grace before lunch. You can't do that. You can't talk about God or recognize God in the public schools. Thomas Jefferson and the founding fathers, you know, wouldn't like that.
Yeah, I think very much Jefferson would be opposed to that idea, because his view, as written in the Virginia Statute of Religious Freedom, was that one's faith should neither enlarge nor diminish their capacity in public life. They should be able to function without any restriction just because they have a religious view. That is the basic idea of so clear in that famous law he passed. So it was a matter of not restricting religious expression, just removing religious, state coercion, removing that possibility of the state coercing the people to do that kind of activity, to restrict, to empower, or promote, or restrict religious expression.
Now, Jefferson, later in life, when the Episcopal Church reopened in his Charlottesville, he rejoined, and then I understand he's, part of the congregation, and they would stand up when they would read together the Apostles' Creed, reading it off the walls and the Lord's Prayer and so forth. Did Jefferson oppose any of that stuff, or did he just participate? And would that make Jefferson a hypocrite, or is it more like we don't fully understand the nuances in Jefferson's beliefs?
He definitely rejoined the Episcopal Church, became an official member, tithing, supporting the church, and was recognized by his pastor as clearly a member in good standing. That is, and without a doubt, he participated in all those things, whatever that worship involved. Now, does it mean he had any personal, qualms with what was being said? We have no way to know, but he paid for it. He paid for that church to be having those services. He gave his personal money, and he attended. Without a doubt, that's evident in the sources we know.
So I was asking at the very start, was Jefferson basically a closet atheist? Is it possible that he was hypocritical, or is it possible that he was more of a mass of contradictions, or is it possible it's just a very nuanced picture and the modern caricature of Thomas Jefferson, essentially the unbeliever, is not accurate? We have about a minute less to go.
I really see Jefferson as a very nuanced, complex person. I think he was very sincere about his participation as a Christian, as he would call himself, within the context of Trinitarian Episcopal worship services. I think he was sincere in all of that. At the same time, he had these private views that had been influenced by different ones. I think probably the most overblown would be the people in France. It's really his own local community. A lot of people don't realize that the strongest churches in his hometown were the Restorationist churches. That was a whole new movement that emerged in the Second Great Awakening that were by evangelical churches, but who were very confused about the Trinity themselves, and they were very anti-creedal. They didn't believe you should have only the name of Christian and no creeds. For the sake of unity. That was what Jefferson identified with probably more than anything. And in fact, he raved about the Union church services in the courthouse in Charlottesville. Before there were even denominational church buildings, he worshiped every Sunday with different denominations and thought this was a great thing in what he called the common temple of it.
All right, we're out of time. Thank you so much for joining us. DoubtingThomasBook.com, Dr. Mark Belisles.